let's head to Australia. Karen Middleton, how was your physics at high school?
Physics not too flash, Catherine. I didn't love physics, I have to say.
Well, you can't be brilliant at everything, and you're very brilliant at what you do. There's a lot of logistics and maths involved in vaccination rollouts and lots of headaches as well. You're having a real curveball there, having invested so much in the AstraZeneca vaccine, and that's the one you can produce on site in Australia, and there's just more problems coming, Karen.
That's right, yes. We've seen worldwide this concern raised about the AstraZeneca vaccine and the possibility that it has a very small probable possibility of creating blood clots in some people. We're being warned that it's a smaller risk than even with some regular medicines like the contraceptive pill, for example. But nevertheless, it is a risk. And so our government changed its rollout strategy last week to announce that people under the age of 55 are now not recommended to have the AstraZeneca vaccine, but to have an alternative. And in this country, that at the moment is the Pfizer vaccine instead. But as you say, we have banked a lot on the AstraZeneca vaccine. We've imported some doses of Pfizer. We're due to get some 20 million more doses, or I think up to 40 million now, sometime through the year. But there's no firm timetable on that. And there've been some export issues out of Europe. And we're otherwise going to be manufacturing on site at AstraZeneca. It is making some people a bit more wary of the vaccine issues, and the government's been criticised for not having a good strategy for rolling this vaccine out. It's usually state governments that run the health systems here in Australia, not the federal government. But the federal government has chosen to take the lead on the vaccination process because it's paying for the vaccines, but it's been having trouble getting them out quickly enough because it's trying to use GP networks and sort of jump over the states. As of yesterday, the Prime Minister just announced that they are going to engage more fully with the states, and the national cabinet arrangement that he's had with state and territory leaders here over the course of the pandemic is now going to go on to what he calls a war footing, which means they'll be meeting twice a week, the leaders of the state and territory jurisdictions and the Prime Minister, rather than once a month, which is where they have been, to try and get this all sorted out. The government had made some promises about when we would all be vaccinated in Australia, and that everyone would have had at least their first dose by October. But that's looking pretty tough now to get to achieve because of this delay in rolling out vaccines. And we're worried, I suppose, a lot of us, that we're going from having been ahead both in New Zealand and in Australia in terms of keeping the virus at bay, as we look at other countries in other parts of the world and how much they've struggled, to being behind in terms of vaccination, and whether that has implications for reopening our international borders and for the economy generally. So there's a bit of pressure on the government right now to get this right and get it moving.
It's such a difficult decision, because you mentioned the contraceptive pill, which is used by millions of women, and these adverse effects are, you know, a very, very small proportion, but still, when they happen, you've got this balance between saying there's going to be a level of adverse event, but we've also got 3 million fatalities from COVID around the world, and not wanting to lose public confidence in the vaccine. And obviously they've gone for a sharp reaction to try and prevent the latter. But it's leaving you in, you know, at the mercy, really, of trying to get those new Pfizer doses. And we're still sitting here hoping like heck that ours arrive.
That's right, and this is the wicked challenge for governments, that they know that it's a case by case basis. Really, you know, they're encouraging people to talk to their doctor, their GP, and talk about what the risks are in each case for themselves. There's a general calculation that the older you get, the risk of attracting COVID and suffering from that is greater than the risk of adverse effects from the AstraZeneca vaccine, and hence they've decided on this sort of age cutoff or benchmark of 50, because the incidence of the blood clotting, low as it is, seems to be greater in younger people. But it is a really difficult decision, and there is also the risk that you make people panic, and that those who've been a bit hesitant about having a vaccine may be more hesitant now. And so you then have trouble reaching what they call herd immunity, having enough people in the community vaccinated that we can go about our lives in a relatively pre-COVID normal, and not being fearful of contracting it and being able to travel again whenever that might be. So there are lots of things to consider.
What's been the impact along the West Australian coast and even further? A massive clean-up. There's been like a double whammy cyclone.
Yeah, this is an incredible phenomenon. It hit worst holiday town of Kalbarri, which is about 700 kilometres north of Perth on the west coast. And it's been known as Cyclone Seroja, but actually it started off as two weather systems that sort of spun together. This is known, I am told, by the scientists as the Fujiwara effect, which is when two cyclones come within close proximity of each other, sort of spin into each other's orbit, and then ultimately either sort of move as two spinning systems connected or as one whole giant system. But it's done a lot of damage. I think some 70% of buildings in the town of Kalbarri have been damaged. We were very fortunate that nobody was killed. But the other strange element of this, because of the amount of wind and rain, and the strength of this system, the unusual nature of it, it's moved way further south than usual and further inland. So even towns in what they call the wheat belt, which is in the southwest and moving across the state of Western Australia, were had a cyclone warning, and while there hasn't been as much damage there, they certainly did get hit. So, you know, it's been a very strange experience for that part of Western Australia to have such a big and unusual weather system, and then it's done a terrible amount of damage. The Premier, Mark McGowan, was up there yesterday and said parts of it looked like a war zone. So it's obviously been a pretty terrible experience for the people there.
Well, this one's well and truly a step up on the fight over PAV. There's a lot of dollars attached to this fight over Manuka and the rights to the name. What's happening on the Aussie side?
Yeah, it's very interesting. The Australian honey producers here are wanting to continue to produce Manuka honey from Australia as well. I know the Kiwi producers have said it's a Maori word and it's a New Zealand product, and that they should have exclusive rights. We're getting to the point of ministers at 10 paces now. So our Trade Minister Dan Tehan has been in touch with your Trade Minister Damien O'Connor to have a conversation. I think they've had a phone call, and now Dan Tehan's written a letter saying they want to try and negotiate. I gather there's a court case on foot that will probably determine trademark issues, but Australia is trying to keep in the game so that it doesn't disadvantage its beekeepers and honey producers here. So it's seeking to negotiate with the Kiwis and insist that we have our own version of Manuka honey here. It's obviously a pretty valuable export product. There are a lot of celebrities who've been spruiking its health benefits, allegedly. So certainly the Australian producers want to keep in good with it. But we've had a tussle with you Kiwis on a number of issues, not least that immigration question we've been talking about. So I'm not sure how much goodwill is left to be doing favours when I know your New Zealand Prime Minister's been complaining about those immigration decisions, those deportations for a long time, and not getting anywhere. So it'll be interesting to see whether your government is more inclined to listen to the gripes of the Australian government than has been the case in reverse. We've got a suburb here in Canberra of it that it goes by that name, although we Philistines over here call it Manuka, the suburb. So maybe that goes against us, so we don't know how to pronounce it properly. But the honey wars continue, Catherine.
It's got to be at least 2 weeks since I've used a line from the castle.
Yeah.
Tell him he's dreaming.
I do suspect that might be the response, but I'm sure the Australian honey producers are very hopeful that there will be something more amenable that can be negotiated.
Some sweetness to be found in the midst of all this. You can come up with a good Aussie name for your honey. You can. Oh,
thanks, Catherine.
Take care.
You too.
It's always appreciated. Karen Middleton is our Australia correspondent. She's based in Canberra.